The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
B-Pod Studios.
Straightforward.
You lose too, big boy.
No holds barred.
I'm starting to think this guy's a con man.
Sports talk.
I got it. All right, I got it.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Third hour, Felger and Maz here from our Tom Ford Tire Studios in Dorchester. Maz alongside, Murray alongside. Felger here in the a-hole chair. Quick thought here on Ezekiel Elliott and the Dallas Cowboys and that holdout. Should the Cowboys give Ezekiel Elliott that money? Should they give him the money, Maz?
I mean, ultimately, I say yes, but not because I don't think they can live without him. I just say they have so much invested now. They've traded for Amari Cooper. Like, the whole thing, why mess with that? Like, at the end of the day, what are you trying to accomplish? Which, to me, is a different question than, you know, is he worth it? Okay, that's a different question. I just look at what Dallas has going and say, why would you screw with this? Give him his money, keep everybody happy, get the team point in the right direction. Now you've got a legitimate threat at receiver on top of it. Your offense could be dynamite if you have them all on the field. So why are you screwing with it?
And as he goes, their offense goes. And obviously I'm biased because I'm pro backs, but without him, and I'm not going to give you the yards and all the other numbers that you'll shut me down on, it just comes down to this. Without him, they don't make the playoffs. So they need Ezekiel Elliott, so they should pay him.
So I like the way you put it, Maz. Is he worth it, or should they do it? Like, because I think that is two different things. He's definitely not worth it. And if you pony up that kind of money for a running back, you're dumb. And I'll state my case as I've stated a million times before. Stupid to pay a running back that kind of contract. Just dumb. But when you've backed yourself into that corner and that's how you've built your team, because I think while I like Dak Prescott, that is a guy that needs a running game. He does. He's not one of those guys that can singularly from the pocket in a pure passing sense pick you apart and control the game through the air and through the he's just not that guy. I think he's the sort of quarterback that goes hand in hand with the running game, and he needs it. And sort of when you draft a guy, what was Zeke? Fourth overall?
I think that's right. Yeah. Number four pick, yeah.
When you draft a guy in the top five, when you're dumb enough to draft a running back in the top five, and you're dumb enough to build your team around your running back, and that's how you're built and engineered, well, then you might as well just go ahead then and prove how dumb you are and just do the whole thing. And so I think they should do it, will do it, but he ain't worth it. None of these guys are. You got to be an idiot to pay a running back a big contract. Idiot. Or to draft him in the top five. But this is, it's part and parcel. Because when you draft a guy in the top five to sort of justify that draft position, you've got to sign him to the second contract. The first contract's no problem, even though in the top five, it's pretty decent money. But you can live with rookie money no matter really where it is. But, you know, they signed for 4 years plus that team option in year five. If you're going to draft a guy in the top five, to justify that top five pick, you pretty much got to get to the second contract and give him the second contract. And for you to give big money to a running back on a second contract, you've got to be a stone-cold moron. Stone-cold moron. Because it just doesn't work. Just doesn't work. Before I go on, Murr, do you want to weigh in?
Hey, we've been over this a million times. So, no, not really.
Okay, so here are the highest paid running backs in the game. Highest paid running backs in the game by AAV. You can do it a bunch of different ways. You're all going to get similar results. I usually do it by AAV, average annual value per year. The highest paid running back in the league AAV is Todd Gurley, just over $14 million. Le'Veon Bell is number two at 13.1. David Johnson with Arizona is number three at 13. Then there's a pretty good drop. Number four is Devontae Freeman at just over eight. Number five is LeSean McCoy at eight. Shaquan Barkley is number six at 7.8, rookie deal. Interestingly, he signed 4 years, $31 million, all guaranteed. But again, rookie contract, $8 million, good talent. He's young. It's really hard to get in trouble there. But anyway, Shaquan Barkley is six, highest paid running back at 7.8. Jerick McKinnon, now with San Francisco, 7.5.
Wow, he's that high?
$7.5 million a year got from San Francisco. He's the seventh highest paid running back in the league. Number eight is Leonard Fournette at 6.7. Lamar Miller, Houston, right? 6.5. And then Zeke at number 10, 6.2. How many Super Bowls did that list generate for you?
That's none, Mike.
It'd
I know.
Be zero.
Yeah.
It'd be zero. Okay, so just let me real quick break it down further. Todd Gurley been in the league 4 years, made the playoffs only twice. His team is 2-2. He made it to the Super Bowl last year, obviously, where he contributed 35 yards, which was triple his production from the NFC Championship game when he gained 10.
Was also hurt in the playoffs.
Le'Veon Bell, running back getting hurt, that's rare. Le'Veon Bell made the playoffs twice in his 5 years. Team was 2-2. Closest he got was the AFC title game versus the Patriots in 2016, a game in which he gained 20 yards. David Johnson has made the playoffs once in 4 years in Arizona. Well, went to the NFC title game in 2015. In that game, he gained 60 yards. Devontae Freeman has made the playoffs twice in 5 years. The team is 3-2. Made it to the Super Bowl versus New England. Actually had a pretty good game that night. It was good. 75 yards on 11 carries plus a touchdown, couple catches as well. McCoy has been in the league 10 years. His teams have made the playoffs 4 times out of the 10 years. He's 0-4. Barkley, obviously just a rookie. Giants went 5-11, didn't make the playoffs. Jerick McKinnon, in his 4 years all in Minnesota, made the playoffs twice. The team's 1-2. He made it all the way to the NFC title game in 2017 where he gained 40 yards. Leonard Fournette made the playoffs once in 2 years. Jags are 2-1. He made it to the AFC title game. Farthest he went versus the Patriots in 2017 where he actually had a good game. Good first half anyway. 76 yards on 24 carries and a touchdown. Lamar Miller, 7 years between Miami and Houston. Teams have made the playoffs twice. Team is 1-2. Zeke Elliott, 3 years in Dallas. Cowboys made the playoffs twice. They're 1-2. Made it to the division round last year where he had 47 yards on 20 carries. Add all that up. The top 10 highest paid running backs in the league. 45 combined seasons. 0 championships. Only 2 trips to the Super Bowl. Teams have made the playoffs only 18 times out of the 45. Combined playoff record 13-18. Why are you paying a running back that kind of money? Unless you're Dallas and you're stupid enough to have built it around the running game and the running back. So now you've sort of painted yourself in the corner and you have to. But you have to be a first class idiot to pay a running back that kind of money. Now notice, this isn't about the running game, Murray. I'll take a running game. It's fine. You want to be balanced, fine. But to commit something that kind of money to that position is ridiculous.
Well, this is where everyone should be mad at the Rams. And is it, who's their GM out there? Les Snead?
Yes.
That everyone in the league, and even me as a running backist, I'm pissed because they screwed this up. Todd Gurley was hurt. He came out of college with a knee issue. And running backs, I will give you, they age like milk. So for them to give him $60 million for 4 or 5 years, whatever the hell it was, and there was like $50 or $45 million guaranteed, they screwed it up for everybody. And that's why the Cowboys are in this situation with Ezekiel Elliott. He should have never gotten that kind of money.
So, but this is my point. So never mind whether you think running backs matter or not. They age horribly. Even you, who loves running backs, you know.
Like, I love Saquon Barkley. The guy's going to last like 4 years.
Okay. But when you draft him 2 overall, you have to sign him to that second contract.
You can't just let him, you know, you can't start fighting with him after year 3, for crying out loud. You can't do it.
You've painted yourself into the corner. You've built yourself on that running back. And now you have to pay Saquon Barkley.
I think he's the best back in the league.
Oh, he's nasty. But he's going to last 3-4 years and he's going to age like milk. And by the time you have to give him that second contract, he's done. Like Gurley, done. So, but when you draft someone top 5, you sort of have to.
No, you're pot committed on that. And that's why, like, these guys are best. I've never said that they're as important as quarterbacks. I'm not that stupid. If you added Saquon Barkley to a, you know, a legit team that is maybe a piece or two away and that needs help in the running game, like, he'd be a stud. That team would probably win a title. To build around him like the Giants are doing? No, that's dumb.
So, Sony Michel, I'm sorry. You're going to get him for 4 years. Maybe he's worth that team option on the 5th, but they're not. Let's just say Sony Michel turns into Barry freaking Sanders, and he wants $15 a year like Todd Gurley, and he wants. You're not going to pay him that.
No,
the Patriots definitely won't.
You'd be stupid to pay him that.
I'd be surprised if they pick up that option if he is what he is right now.
So he's gone.
And when I say that, I mean he doesn't catch the ball.
Well,
if he caught the ball, I'd feel differently.
Injury history alone, they're not going to do it.
But this is my point. So at 30, he was drafted 31 overall. He signed a 4-year, $9 million deal. So, Are you compelled to sign him to a second contract at 31 overall?
No.
You're not. But I still, so this is why, more than anything, why I would never draft a running back in the first round. I like to think that my first round pick turns into a franchise player who gets to a second contract and is with you from 5 to 10 years, 5 to 8 years. I know that's asking a lot, but, you know, at least gets through the rookie contract, proves it on the rookie contract, and is part of your future, is a pillar, a foundational piece. And I never, ever want to sign one of these big running backs to a second contract, ever, because by the time you get there to the second contract, year four, year five, they're done. It's over. And so that's why you never draft a guy like that in the top five, whether you believe in the running back or not, because even if you believe in the running back, you know they don't age. They age horribly.
Now, the only guy that's really bucked that trend and has also, you know, bucked how you feel about guys getting selected in the first round is Marshawn Lynch, at least in the last 15 or 20 years. So he went like in the teens. He got traded from the Bills, and he ended up being like the building block. Granted, they needed Russell Wilson there, and that helped, but, you know, he was the foundation of their offense.
Few and far between. It's the third lowest paid position on the field, running back, for a reason. Follow the money. Does the running back matter? Ask the people who are writing the checks. It's the third lowest paid position on the field. You got to be some sort of moron to draft the third lowest paid position on the field in the top five, but pay him top end money and then sign him to a second contract when they're toast about 4 or 5 years at best.
I mean, to me, there's only a handful of guys that you can say are, you know, potential game changers, and usually it's because they catch the ball. So, like, to me, like, if you were to tell me Marshall Faulk in his prime was a factor, he was, but he could catch it.
All right, so let's just pick this up on the other side. If you had to pay that to anyone in the league at that position, who would it be? We'll get to that right after this.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Matt.
This is Bob Soucy. The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon. As a runner myself representing the Flutie Foundation at the 2022 Boston Marathon, I'm proud to have been a teammate to many amazing Adaptive Program runners, achieving their dreams at the greatest race in the world. The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Don't let the weather limit your passion for golf. Go to Winslow's Kitchen Bar and Range, state-of-the-art Top Tracer driving range with shot tracing technology and Power Tee ball automation. Whether you're a golf enthusiast or a weekend warrior, you'll love Winslow's 16 heated bays with full-service food and drink, trivia nights, and live music in the clubhouse. Winslow's open 7 days a week, rain, snow, or shine, at Green Harbor Golf Club, 624 Webster Street in Marshfield. Book your bay at greenharborgolfclub.com/Winslow's. Winslow's, because good times and golf shouldn't have an off-season.
Felger and Mass.
I love it.
You were right, Mass.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
Zeke Sagan expressed unhappiness with me. Ezekiel, Joe, have you talked to them since then?
Look, I've earned the right with Zeke to joke. Period. I've earned it. But let me be real clear about it. I've earned that right to joke.
Jerry Jones yesterday, following up on the... At one point he said, Zeke who? And then Zeke's agent said that we feel disrespected. And so that was Jones's answer. I've earned the right to joke with Zeke. I've earned that right. What does he mean by that?
I hated this comment.
I'm rich enough to bust anyone's balls.
So, right. I hated the tone of it.
Yeah, it bothered me. I didn't like this comment.
With the, you know, and it's just the Southern accent, Texas, African-American play, like that. It's just, and I'm not calling Jones a racist or anything like that. I'm just saying, is that what he's driving at? You know, is that what he's saying? That I own this team and I pay these guys a lot of money and I can say what I want about them. You know, I don't know, like that sort of had that tone. Is that what he meant?
Oh, I think, yeah, and I didn't even consider the race aspect of it, but he definitely strikes me as a guy that looks at his players as property. Like, that's the tone of it.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I don't think that's what he meant, but those...
Oh, that's how it sounds.
It's how it sounds.
It came off that way. It did. And I'll tell you what, keep it as simple as this. Well, I'm the owner of the team. Everyone answers to me. Don't you come off as an a-hole?
Oh, so I want to know what he meant by that.
So I think it was just him throwing his weight around, flexing his muscles like, I'm the owner of the team. I can do whatever the hell I want. It's like, screw you.
Not your property. You know, he sort of, it's so.
That's
that,
definitely what it comes
to. You know,
off
did it, me, it sort of had that tonality to me.
I've earned that right to call him trash.
Like,
he's such an a-hole.
Oh, so
he really is. He's such an a-hole.
It'd be one thing if he was joking, but it's like, look.
Right, if he said it with like, yeah, a smile.
I got a relationship with these guys. We go back and forth. It's okay if we joke with each other.
Instead, he comes off as like a lizard person.
That's different than, you know, he had some tone there. I earned that right. How'd you earn that right?
Yeah, if he...
I don't know, man. Like, I hated the tone there. Or unless he meant... Because he could also mean this, and that is Ezekiel Elliott's sort of an asswipe himself. I mean, he's had a bunch of off-field stuff, a bunch of questionable stuff that the Cowboys and the league has overlooked. And is Jones saying, I've given this guy a lot of breaks, so I can bust his balls a little bit if I want. Which, if he said it with a different tone, I might give him. But he just, that tone was, boy, he just
there
really.
There was some venom behind it.
Just, no, but he just, the whole, it had the tonality of he's talking about his property and I can talk about my property however I want. Like, that's.
I've earned the right with Z to joke.
I mean, it'd be one thing if he says, look, this guy's, I mean, I don't know. Look, I think the Cowboys in the league has given Ezekiel Elliott a lot of second chances and a lot of breaks. And so, you know, I've given him a lot of chances and a lot of second. Yeah, I've given him a lot of breaks, so I can bust his balls if I want. He can bust mine too. Like that's different. But I hated the tonality of that comment.
Do you think that that's what it was?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah,
the tone though. I was like, ooh,
yeah.
Jerry.
I think it was a power trip. That's what I think it was. It was a power trip. And again, what the genesis of it is, you know, what drove it, I have no idea. But because I can't get inside, but it was a power trip. That was no. I've earned it. I've earned it. I have the right. I'm the owner. That was a power trip, and he came off as a raging a-hole.
So I don't know what Ezekiel Elliott's asking for. He deserves to make a little bit more than Todd Gurley and be the highest paid running back in the league. He does. He does.
And Le'Veon Bell money.
Well, Le'Veon Bell's just under Todd Gurley.
Yeah, so. But no one should. Again, I think Todd Gurley and the Rams screwed this up for everybody. As much of a pro running back I am, that money he got with a knee issue that he came out of college with is ridiculous. They should have never given him that kind of contract.
So, look, I think giving running backs a second contract for that kind of money is just ridiculous, because by the time you give them that money, they're toast. They're done. They're just about done. You want to abuse them as rookies, because that's what you do with the running backs? Just do it. Fine. And you get 4 years of fifth-year team option. You draft them at the end of the first round. You can justify losing them after 4 or 5 years. But when you draft them in the top five and you built your whole team around them, you pretty much got to give them the second contract. And Ezekiel Elliott's arguably the best running back in the league, or right up there, so you got to pay him right up there. Who would you give that money to? Murray, you're a big back guy. Who are your top five backs in the league? We do this with quarterbacks all the time. Give me your top five running backs.
Saquon Barkley, but he's in a bad spot. Ezekiel Elliott is number two. Alvin Kamara with the Saints, number three. Christian McCaffrey would be number four. And then Todd Gurley's dropped because I'm worried about his knee. I put him at number five.
I mean, I basically have the exact same order. And honestly, to me, it's two guys and then everybody else. And it's Barkley and Elliott. And then the next, you know, I also put Kamara and McCaffrey, but I kind of have them even. I sort of look at them as the same kind of animal. You don't want to give those two guys 300 carries.
Right.
I mean, they can't handle the workload, right? They're not big enough.
But they're great as pass catchers.
Tremendous receivers.
I was going to say, why is McCaffrey on this list?
As a pass catcher.
107 catches last year.
Yeah, and what's his name, though? Barkley had 95, didn't he?
Barkley had 91 catches.
I mean, it ridiculous, those two.
So those guys are on my list because they all catch the ball. Even Elliott does. McCaffrey, 107 receptions.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
He ran for like, I don't know. Did he run for 1,000 yards, too? I think he did.
I didn't bother doing that. I went to the yards per carry because that's the one that matters.
So to me, it's all the, and again, and for the last spot, I have Bell and or Gurley because I think they're sort of the same animal now again.
Le'Veon Bell.
He got 80 something passes with the Steelers.
Last three full seasons with the Steelers. He was hurt for one of them, but the last three full seasons, 83, 75, 85 catches.
Yeah.
So he's a dual threat. He's in the passing game. The running backs that go out there and they just, like Leonard Fournette, I didn't even look up his pass catching stuff.
Useless.
So you sent out Leonard, big fat Leonard Fournette, and it's like, well, that's one less guy we have to cover. You got to cover five of them. Now we can only have cover four, because you can really not cover Leonard Fournette. He'll catch it in the flat. And a linebacker can catch. He's just not going to catch. He's not going to hurt you.
It's like LeGarrette Blount.
That's ridiculous. So those guys to me are useless.
Just to quickly answer, Maz, he did. McCaffrey did rush over 1,000 and had a 5-yard average.
So that's why I looked at the 5-yard average. McCaffrey had 107 receptions and a 5 yards per carry average, ninth in the league. Okay, I'll take it. Saquon Barkley, 91 catches, tied with McCaffrey, 5 yards per carry average, 10th in the league. Take that any day of the week.
I think Barkley is the most explosive back in the league.
Elliott had 77 catches. I don't really view him as a pass catcher. He caught 77 balls on 95 targets.
Yeah, ton of catches.
Efficient, you know, pass catcher. So fine, we'll take it. Kamara, pass, you know, big in the receiving game. Kareem Hunt, you forget about him?
No. I just...
Go ahead.
You know, I mean, the suspension, you got to factor that in, and how's he going to factor into that Browns offense? I mean, he was awesome when he was in Kansas City, but who knows? There could be a little bit of a drop-off.
Tell you what, you want to put him in the same group with Bell and Gurley, like in that area, the same guy? Fine. Like, I think that he's probably a little better than those guys because he's got a little less tread on him.
But for any of these guys, I'll draft these guys, not in the top five. They can play on my team. I'll give them the ball. And I'll pay them on their rookie contract because that's really not going to hurt me. But if you want to give any of these guys like $14, $13, $15 million a year with massive guarantees on their second contract from ages 25 to 30, you've got to be stupid. But when you draft someone in the top five, what do you have to do it, which is why it's stupid to draft in the top five. That's my thesis, Murray. That's in a nutshell. And I think you might even agree. I mean, would you pay Todd Gurley at this stage? I mean, this is only like his third or fourth year, right?
Yeah, fourth year.
But I feel like he's done already.
Feels that way, doesn't it? Because he was so banged up at the end of the year.
And it's his knee. And again, that was a knee he blew out in college. Like, it's a problem.
How's his vag? Because is he tough? I mean, was he really hurt?
The question was jarring.
Well, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
I question his, how's his heart is what I, you know, that's another way to say it. How's his heart?
How's his sensitivity?
Look, same with Le'Veon Bell. Same with, I mean.
See, I worry about Bell, too, because he just missed a whole year. Like, I don't know what happened during that year. Like, I need to see it again.
And what's that Jets offensive line like, too? You know,
Bell, would it surprise anyone if Bell is totally cashed, done?
No.
See you later?
No, that's what I mean. I you know, now, when he was in the league, did I, and playing regularly, I mean, did I like Bell? Yeah, mostly because he would go out, you know, he'd stay on the field all three downs. He could catch it on third down. Like, there's a lot of value there. And you want to tell me he can carry it 20 times a game on top of it? Great. Like, there's a guy I want. I'll take a guy like that any day of the week. I'm telling you, I think far and away right now, the best guy in the league is Barkley.
Okay, I promised. Your calls next after the update.
Sports Hub Headlines.
Aaron Nola pitching seven innings of four-hit ball to win for the sixth time in his last seven decisions, getting three runs of support in the first inning and cruising to a 3-2 win over the Red Sox last night at Fenway Park. Tonight, the Red Sox wrap up this two-game series with Philly. With Rick Porcello on the mound for the Sox, goes up against Philly's lefty Drew Smyly. First pitch is at 7:10. In an interview with Bob Nightingale of USA Today, Red Sox president of baseball ops Dave Dombrowski was asked about the rumors of his dismissal at the end of this terrible season, and he said, quote, I don't want to say too much about it, but I am surprised at least a little bit. I mean, we did win three divisions in a World Series, but I get it. This is a tough market. It's been known as that. More baseball news. Jeff Passan of ESPN reporting that the use of gas station sexual enhancement pills in baseball is so prevalent that Major League Baseball sent out a memo warning players that their use could lead to positive PED tests. And a little bit of NFL news from Ian Rappaport of NFL Network. Sources telling him that at this point, Chargers running back Melvin Gordon's holdout expected to continue into the season. Contract talks have not progressed as he hoped. He will continue to train in Florida for the foreseeable future. Headlines are brought to you by Acura Peabody's Summer of Performance sales event. Get a new 2019 all-wheel drive Acura RDX luxury crossover for just $315 a month for 36 months. Find out more by going to AcuraPeabody.com. I'm Jim Murray for Boston's home for sports. 98.5 is Sports Hub. Next update, 5 o'clock.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5.
This is Bob Soucy. The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon. As a runner myself representing the Flutie Foundation at the 2022 Boston Marathon, I'm proud to have been a teammate to many amazing Adaptive Program runners, achieving their dreams at the greatest race in the world. The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Don't let the weather limit your passion for golf. Go to Winslow's Kitchen Bar and Range, state-of-the-art Top Tracer driving range with shot tracing technology and Power Tee ball automation. Whether you're a golf enthusiast or a weekend warrior, you'll love Winslow's 16 heated bays with full-service food and drink, trivia nights, and live music in the clubhouse. Winslow's open 7 days a week, rain, snow, or shine, at Green Harbor Golf Club, 624 Webster Street in Marshfield. Book your bay at greenharborgolfclub.com/Winslow's. Winslow's, because good times and golf shouldn't have an off-season.
I hate jokes.
We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The team takes precedent over, and that is my judgment. The team takes precedent at a point over the opinion or the demand of the individual. This was a team move that we are talking about today, a real team move. The team takes precedent.
Are you confident that the other
And I've got the backbone to keep the and to keep it that way.
Okay, that one to me doesn't bother me as much as the first one. The first one had tone that I thought was kind of ugly. That one, we got a payroll, there's a salary cap, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like that I get. And if you overpay a running back, you're freaking stupid. But I feel like the Cowboys sort of have to. All right, your thoughts on all this, and we'll circle back and reset the strength of schedule thing that we spent a lot of time on in the first half of the show as well. Here is Mike in Nashua. Go ahead, Mike, on the running back thing. Michael, you're up on the air. Go ahead, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay, I'm going to let you go. Larry in Duxbury on Ezekiel Elliott. Go ahead, Larry.
Hey, guys. My question is, isn't it the same as quitting when you say you're not going to play? And from a contract point of view, they don't get to go on strike. And as the owner, can't you just void the contract, said, okay, you're not playing, you quit. And does that free up cap space as well? This whole, I don't want to play, isn't that a legal thing with a contract violated?
Oh, well, if you void the contract, make him a free agent, he'll sign somewhere else. You can't draft someone 3 overall and then after 3 years let him become a free agent with nothing in return. That's stupid.
No, and look, and ultimately, push comes to shove. What is it, like week 10 you have to show up or you lose?
Yeah, right, it's service time.
Right, so somewhere along the line, Zeke's going to have to play. Otherwise, he'll be right back in the same boat next season.
Look. He probably deserves to be the highest paid running back. It's not his time. He's not up as a free agent yet. He's got another year to go and that team option if they want to slap it on him. So they have 2 more years of team control, I believe. And so that's the argument against it, that you're not your time. But I pretty much always side with the player in the NFL because they get hosed around so much that when you have the leverage, you best use it because they'll cut your ass in a second and the money's not guaranteed. And so when you have your leverage, you use it. So I don't really blame Ezekiel Elliott for doing this now. I don't know if his leverage is ever going to be higher.
No. Listen, in that league, if you want what you want, you got to hold out. And Brady's never wanted to do it, right?
Yeah, so I mean, I don't blame Ezekiel Elliott necessarily. I blame the Cowboys for drafting a guy 3 overall at that position. You got to have your head examined. I mean, so you draft someone 3 overall, you got to sign him to a second contract to justify it. If he performs, you got to pay him at the top of the market to justify it. Yet the rest of the league says the position's not important. That's the league talking, Murray, not me. Franchise projections next year, franchise numbers. Here are the positions in order. Quarterback, 1 at 26.7. Defensive end is 2nd. Wide receiver is 3rd. Linebacker is 4th. Cornerback is 5th. Stop me when I get to running back. Offensive line is 6th. Defensive line is 7th. Safety is 8th. Oh, here we are. Running back, 9th. The running back franchise projected number next year is $12.5 million. Then tight end is 10, and then special teams is a distance 11th.
Did you say wide receivers were 3rd?
3rd. It's a little high for my liking.
I feel like that's high.
I'd go, quarterback, and then in whatever order, because I'm willing to argue this, but to me, quarterback and then draw a line, and then the next 3 most important positions by far are pass rushing, defensive end, outside linebacker, cornerback.
Left tackle.
Boom. That's it. Passing game players. That's it. And then put receiver in there somewhere. And then you can get to your interior offensive line, interior defensive line, running back, safety, blah, blah, blah. Like that is to me by far the less important part of the game. So if you draft a running back, top 5, he performs, holds out, you've built your offense around him. What are you going to do? You got to pay him like a wide receiver when the rest of the league said the running back is the third lowest paid position on the field. That's why it's stupid. Another reason to draft a guy up there. We've got Jim in Cambridge with the Patriots talk. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, guys. Follow up from yesterday.
Take me off that speaker, Jim, right this second.
Okay. And also, the other thing is
I don't think he did it. Or he's got some sort of headgear. He's got some sort of thing.
That's a speakerphone.
Can't do it.
That's a speakerphone.
It's rude. It's disrespectful. No, you want to talk about disrespectful. That is disrespectful. Tony in Maine with the Patriots talk. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, guys.
Brady threw up a stinker in the Teddy Bruschi stroke return game. He should have lost that one, but that is quite fascinating what you guys talked about as far as his record against AFC East opponents. My other question is, Felger, can you, for those of us that work for a living, can you explain to me in detail the Steve Belichick-Malcolm Butler conspiracy?
So the conspiracy is, and I have no idea what happened or what didn't, you know, but one of the conspiracies is that there was something involving Butler and Steven. That's all I want to say. I don't, you know, I'll let someone else say it. Well, you've all heard the rumors, but there's something in there, something involving off-field involving Steve and Malcolm Butler. And that happened. Super Bowl week, and there was a lead-up to it, and blah, blah, blah.
And that was the last straw.
And I guess the last straw. So, which is no reason to lose a Super Bowl. You want to hate them like poison? You want to do anything like that? That's just sort of this other thing we talked about yesterday. You know, having kids on your staff or having kids work for the dad. There's always something like that cropping up, and now you're making decisions to protect your family and sort of get your sons back versus what's best for the team. And that's why it's problematic to have the kids work for the dad in the family business. I know guys, I should have mentioned this yesterday, I know guys who own family businesses who have a rule, no kids, no kids. And I know one guy who has a big family business, he's got brothers with nephews, and they could use it, and no, hard and fast rule, no kids. Not allowed to work for the family business.
I mean, I think that's the right way to go. I think that's just it's a bad setup. It's a bad setup. Unless it's like a small family business where you own a junkyard. You know, like, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Like you want to be Sanford and Son or whatever, then have a blast.
Yeah, four-man operation.
Right,
yeah, okay,
like that's a little different. Yeah. But, you know, you're running a company and you're going to have your son work for you and order other people around? Like, no good.
Dopey nephew wants an easy gig. Or something like that.
Oh, no good. No. Doesn't work.
And this is, you know, my worry about the Patriots staff. It's becoming slappies and kids and the kids slappies and like, oof, what are we doing down there?
No, it's a recipe for disaster, I'm telling you.
Okay. CBS Sports wrote a story today. Ranking the toughest roads to Super Bowl 54. They say, who has the toughest road to Super Bowl 54? Ranking the path for all 32 teams. So, the number one toughest road to Super Bowl 54, i.e., in their formula, the toughest strength of schedule, the toughest road to the playoffs belongs to the Chicago Bears. They're number one on the list. Guess who's number 32 on the list? We'll get to that after these words.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Don't let the weather limit your passion for golf. Go to Winslow's Kitchen Bar and Range, state-of-the-art Top Tracer driving range with shot tracing technology and Power T ball automation. Whether you're a golf enthusiast or a weekend warrior, you'll love Winslow's 16 heated bays with full-service food and drink, trivia nights, and live music in the clubhouse. Winslow's open 7 days a week, rain, snow, or shine, at Green Harbor Golf Club, 624 Webster Street in Marshfield. Book your bay at greenharborgolfclub.com/Winslow's. Winslow's, because good times and golf shouldn't have an off season.
Miss something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
Okay, let's reset our top story here, top topic. And boy, do you hate it. Oh, do you hate this topic? Which means I kind of like it. But again, this is the third rail for Patriots fans. This is the third rail of Patriots fandom. This is your least favorite brand of commentary. It really is. As I said earlier, I could go Deflategate. I could go Cheater before I go this. You'd get less upset if I spent the next hour talking about you cheating than me talking about the fact that your division sucks and you perennially have among the easiest roads to the Super Bowl of anyone in football. That thing, the AFC East blows and your road is easy, goes right up your tailpipe. Nothing goes further up your tailpipe than that.
You know why?
Why?
Because when it comes to the cheating, there's still a measure of doubt in their minds that the Patriots actually did it, but they know this is true.
I don't know if that's it. I don't know if that's it. But I do know.
I like that, though, man. That's pretty good.
But I do know how you've. So this is low-hanging fruit for us. This is easy. This is like an easy off-day sort of topic. But what can I tell you? Maz told me this morning, they mentioned this on the morning show. I hadn't heard it, and then I went and looked at it. CBSSports.com, individual by the name of John Breach. Headline, who has the toughest road to the Super Bowl, ranking the path for all 32 teams? And they have their brand of strength of schedule. They don't just put in the records from the previous year to give you your strength of schedule. They look at the actual situation, and the example they use, for example, is... the Pittsburgh Steelers and Miami and New England. Both Miami and New England play Pittsburgh. So on their raw strength of schedule, they're both playing a team that has a strength of schedule or a winning percentage of last year of whatever it is, 630, whatever their one loss record was, 578. I don't know what it was. So it's treated the same in terms of the strength of their opponent from the year before. However, the Patriots play the Steelers at home on a Sunday night, and Miami has to travel to Pittsburgh on a Monday night. Kind of different, much different game, wouldn't you say?
No question.
Okay, so that game is not created equal. They go in and they look at every team and every game, and they look at that. So they look at that. Okay, home road, what kind of night it is, etc. They factor in what time of the year that you're playing that team. They factor in your division. They factor in all sorts of other things. It's not just pure one loss percentage from the year before for their strength of schedule metric. They have their own. They have their own fancy formula. Okay. So, for example, they have the hardest road to the Super Bowl being the Chicago Bears. They have number two being the Minnesota Vikings. So something tells me that that NFC North schedule is hard. Well, it's a good division. All four teams you can make a case for. Green Bay has the eighth toughest road, and Detroit has the ninth toughest road. So all four teams in the NFC North have a top 10 hard road to the Super Bowl because the division is good, and they probably play an AFC division that's also strong. Okay. So Chicago's number one, Minnesota's number two, Denver's number three. They play in a very good division, et cetera, et cetera. All the way down to number 32. Guess who, according to this story in CBS Sports, has the easiest road to the Super Bowl?
Huh.
Your New England Patriots.
I wouldn't guess that.
John Breach writes, he says, the lead to his story, if you're getting tired of watching the Patriots play in the Super Bowl, then I have some bad news for you. Their streak of three consecutive appearances might not be ending this year, and that's because out of all the teams in the NFL, New England has the easiest path to Super Bowl 54, according to our scheduling formula.
Yeah, Breach should drink bleach.
Oh, you hate this, don't you? Again, I could go John Jastrzemski, Birdman, and Deflator here, and you'd be less upset than this. The second paragraph, Breach says, if your first thought after hearing that is that the Patriots always seem to have the easiest schedule, I don't disagree, he writes. And I would ask you send all complaints and conspiracy theories about that subject to Roger Goodell. See, you think Goodell's out to get you. The rest of the league says, how come Goodell keeps setting up the Patriots with the easiest schedule in the league every year? Because that's how it feels. And on and on and on. You can read the story on CBSSports.com.
It's true. It's true.
Discuss.
Okay, so again, for me, the big thing, and you went through some of the specifics there, like that Pittsburgh game. Okay, the Patriots have opened at home 10 times in the Brady Belichick era. They're 9-1. The one game they lost was Kansas City a couple of years ago.
Okay, so but let's also be fair. When you win the Super Bowl, you get to open at home on Thursday or Sunday night.
So that's six of them right there.
Well, but so they earn that. That's not a scheduling quirk. That's something you earn.
Okay, but I'm just telling you that they also win at home after they win the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Right? So not everybody wins at home, but they do. But beyond that, like the big thing to me that sticks out is the division. They have six layups on the schedule right out of the gate. Now, look, you want to say, well, what about at Miami? Fine. I'll give you that one. 5-1. Like, what's the difference? It's automatic. Their home games against division opponents are a joke. And they've been a joke for a long, long time. And we actually went through and looked this up. The Patriots, the last time they lost a meaningful regular season division home game... I laugh even saying it was November of 2006, 13 years ago. That's the last time anybody in the division beat him in Foxborough. 2006. Are you kidding me? I had hair back then. I did. I had hair back then. 13 years ago. 13 freaking years.
So again, they've lost three division games since, but I'll give you the three. Jacoby Brissett versus the Bills a couple years ago, not Brady. Then there was a game week 17 against Buffalo, I want to say 4 years ago, where Garoppolo played the final three quarters. Then there was a game at the end of the 2006 season where they wanted to play Jacksonville in the first round versus Pittsburgh. So they played Nick Saban's Miami Dolphins in week 17. That was the game Bill had little Doug Flutie dropkick. So they basically threw that game because on the final two-point conversion, Tom Brady called Matt Cassel over to the sidelines for a two-point conversion to tie the ball game. Matt Cassel promptly threw the ball into the cheerleaders. So they meant to lose that game.
He did. It was about 10 feet over the receiver's head.
So those are the three division losses since 2006. The last AFC East game at home you tried to win but lost.
With Brady at quarterback.
With Brady at quarterback. Was the 2006 regular season game against the Jets and Eric Mangini where the field was slopped. That was the last grass game. Bill was so pissed off after that game. He ripped up the grass, put in turf. We've never had a grass football game there since. Pats also thought Mangini, I'm talking about cheating, they thought Mangini was cheating that day. Mangini had your play calls. That's why they came out after the game. Guys like Seymour Vrabel said we were outcoached and because they knew Mangini had your whatever. So blah, blah, blah. That's a 2006. That you know how long ago that was? It was so long ago. Maz had hair and I didn't have much. It's like
and Bush was president. I mean, it's a lifetime ago, essentially. It's insane.
13 years. 13 years. Your daughter was two.
So you are, and as Patriots fans, I know you're hypersensitive to this. You're hypersensitive to this, and this, you know, and I'm sure when I get home, I'm going to open my email inbox. I'm going to get all the data about how they win as much against the rest of the league as they do the division, and that proves the division, it doesn't help them. To which I say, how does...
Use your eyes. Enough with your nerd numbers. It doesn't matter. The competition's crap. It has been for the better part of 20 years, and you shouldn't be that defensive about it. It just proves that the Patriots, it's just a testament to their dominance. If they were an iffy team, they would struggle against this crap. They don't. They continually squash them.
Tom Brady has never lost a meaningful regular season home game against Buffalo or Miami.
Ever.
And when you think of some of the losses against them, against these teams, like on the road, two immediately come to mind. It's because Bill screwed it up. The Steven Jackson game in Miami at the end of 2015. The game at the Jets at the end of 2015. He elects to kick in overtime.
How about last year's Miami game?
Right. You know, like it's dumb stuff like that. They're shooting themselves in the foot. It's not because of the competition.
It's unbelievable. It really is.
So there's that, and then there's just sort of scheduling quirks every year. Like, you have a couple tough games on paper, and the first seven games for you are an utter joke. But you could say Pittsburgh might be pretty good, the Giants might be pretty good, the Browns might be pretty good. They're all at home. They're all at home. Pittsburgh's at home on a Sunday night. The Giants are at home on a Thursday night. And Cleveland comes in here on a Sunday late afternoon game. But your tough games are at home in the first seven games. Your first seven games are a joke. Speaking of Thursday, here's another scheduling quirk that someone still has to explain to me. You're home again on Thursday night. You have seven of your last eight Thursday night games have been at home.
Correct.
You have played at home just about every Thursday night. The only one that you did not play at home on a Thursday night was Tampa. If you want to go back further, if you take out Thanksgiving Day games, which kind of sort of don't count, but if you take out the Thanksgiving Day games in which they played at Detroit twice and the Jets once, the butt fumble game, in this sample I'm about to give you. So again, before the Tampa game, and if you take out Thanksgiving Day games, the last time you played on the road on a Thursday night, you're not going to believe this, was 1990.
I definitely had hair back then.
So I was going to say, Rod Rust was 91. Was that Dick McPherson? Who was in 90? 90, was that still Raymond Barry? Who was a coach in 1990?
Good question.
Rust was 91. Then was it Mack in 92 and 93? And then Parcells took over in 94?
I don't remember.
Rod Rust.
Rod Rust was a coach in 90.
Oh, that was a bad year.
So the last time, basically, take out Thanksgiving, Thursday Night Football, you've been home every game except for Tampa a couple years ago and a 1990 game. How is that? How are you home every Thursday night?
You got me. Again, I told you, I looked it up, and even the Thursday night road games you've played, they've been in Detroit and the Jets.
Detroit, Jets, and Tampa have been your road Thursday night games between here and 1990.
And that's during the Belichick era.
1990! 30 years ago. I'm not talking like 12 years ago, 90.
The Patriots quarterback that day was someone named Mark Wilson.
Oh, sure. I remember Mark Wilson. That was the good old days.
Yeah, he played with the Raiders.
Finished his Patriots career with a 1-9 record with nine touchdowns.
Wilson, Tommy Hodson, that was that whole era. Yeah, that was good stuff.
Those were dark days. Seriously, that was a dark time, Murray. You have no idea. We didn't see the sun for years at that time.
So you perennially have one of the easiest schedules in the league. According to some advanced, and again, Pro Football Focus does this all the time too. They have an advanced, you know, strength of schedule metric. You're always at the bottom of the league. These folks here at CBS Sports, this isn't Felger and Maz trolling. This isn't, you know, Adam Jones, the Dark Knight doing this. These are independent people who have no, you know, dog in the fight. They just spit the numbers and the games into their supercomputer and they spit it out and you have the easiest road to Super Bowl 54. Does that upset you? And here's what I say. I'll say it one more time because I said this before. I need to strike some sort of commonality with Patriots fans because, well, you know what? I'll pick that up on the other side. You and I need to come to an understanding because you're flaming hypocrites. So we've got to come to some sort of understanding on this topic or we're all going to lose our minds. First, Murray's 90-second update, no commercials.
This is Bob Soucy. The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon. As a runner myself representing the Flutie Foundation at the 2022 Boston Marathon, I'm proud to have been a teammate to many amazing Adaptive Program runners, achieving their dreams at the greatest race in the world. The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Don't let the weather limit your passion for golf. Go to Winslow's Kitchen Bar and Range, state-of-the-art Top Tracer driving range with shot tracing technology and Power T ball automation. Whether you're a golf enthusiast or a weekend warrior, you'll love Winslow's 16 heated bays with full-service food and drink, trivia nights, and live music in the clubhouse. Winslow's open 7 days a week, rain, snow, or shine, at Green Harbor Golf Club, 624 Webster Street in Marshfield. Book your bay at greenharborgolfclub.com/Winslow's. Winslow's, because good times and golf shouldn't have an off season. It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.